This week's episode brought to you by GoDaddy. This is Jeremy filling in for Brian on this episode of the Linux Action Show. This week on the Linux Action Show! Has an Unreal Trojan opened your Linux box's back door? Novell strikes a major deal that just might keep the cash flowing. We'll give you the details. We've got some official news on Chrome OS and some not-so-official news as well. Canonical announces plans to build a new tablet OS. Wait, what? We discuss. Then, it's our action review of XBMC and why it makes Linux the first-class media center it is. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Linux Action Show, Season 12, Episode 5. My name is Chris, and with me today is Jeremy.
Hey there, Chris.
Hey, Jeremy. What runs Linux?
The Bang Nano Note runs Linux. Check this little baby out, it is little.
Yeah, is a good description.
The screen is only 3 inches. I'll show you some pictures in a bit after we show you some of the specs here.
It's interesting, right? It's got a 366 megahertz X-Burst MIPS compatible CPU. That's like not a mainstream CPU, I don't think.
No,
and interesting.
That seems like really. Yeah, it seems really cruddy, but.
Well, I bet it's part of their secret sauce for getting low power, because this thing is really. We'll show you some pictures. It's really tiny, and
Let me get you here a size comparison of this thing side by side with a can of Coke. Look at that.
it's actually smaller than a can of Coke.
Yeah,
but it's got a full little. Well, not a full keyboard, but it's got. You know, it's almost like the BlackBerry-style keyboard where there's multiple keys. Mm-hmm. It's pretty wild. Now, you were telling me something about the hardware on this guy, though.
The hardware is, well, the hardware's not very good. I don't think
it's not
the
super
specs
awesome.
Are all that great. But the really cool thing about this that I think you guys will get a kick out is actually the developer of this thing, a company called Qi, Q-I, they are into this concept of open source hardware, basically.
Yeah.
They call it copyleft as opposed to copyright.
Yeah.
And it's basically they are going to... fully document all the hardware that's used on this platform.
And I think they're trying to use technology that has like open drivers available mm-hmm. for it and stuff like that. So that's really cool. So they're doing this little cool like – because that mobile portable space, there's just a ton of technology there.
Sure.
Oh, there's an image there with a guy holding it too. And you know, to bring that down to this hardware level here is just so cool in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And they've recently gotten Debian running on it, so you don't have to use like their flavor of Linux or anything like that. You could run a standard Debian distribution. That's mm-hmm. pretty neat. A solid runs Linux, sir.
I honestly don't know what you'd use something like this for, but I mean, you know, it's like a tiny netbook.
I think I remember hearing that they have a very focused market goal, like people out in the field, like. Street surveyors and stuff like that, or consensus takers, where you just need this little tiny device with very limited
input.
Take
notes, basically. Or,
yeah, maybe just fill out like pre-identified fields and, mm-hmm. and things like that. Exactly, notes, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Cool enough, I think.
All right.
And mention the price.
Oh, yeah, it's only $100. You know, frequently we come on with these, or Chris comes on with these devices that are a little pricey, a little high on the end when they're first coming out, but this is only $100, $99.
So you know what that means? Not a baby's first Linux machine. Not a bad one.
Not a bad one.
Baby's first Linux machine.
Yeah, you can even get a 10-pack for for $99.90.
Yeah,
you can buy 10 of them.
I think it's pretty neat. I don't know. We came across it, and Jeremy said we've got to do this as our own Linux.
Yeah.
And I was like, I agree. All right, now I have got a really cool Android app that literally is very likely to save you hundreds of dollars.
I like that.
I am not kidding. But before we do that, let's say holler to our buddies over at GoDaddy.com. Now,
hello.
Jeremy, you know about GoDaddy.com, right?
Heard of them, yeah.
If you go over to GoDaddy.com and use our code Linux at checkout, you can save 10% off any order. And if you use our code Linux20, you'll save 20% off hosting. And we were just talking. We've got a little blog project in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we've got a few different Linux servers that run over at GoDaddy for our mirror system. So we're going to use... GoDaddy to host this blog system that we're working on.
Yeah.
And really, honestly, one of the things that really sold us on the idea was just how easy it is to get ramped up to get rolling.
It's like that one one-click install.
Yeah, they have their app marketplace where you can go and just deploy applications on your mm-hmm. hosted server, like WordPress or Drupal or all these other like actually fairly sophisticated packages that they'll do for you on the back end.
So it's really easy. If you've got a great idea, you just go to their site and basically click a few buttons, and you're ready to roll with your idea.
There you have it. So use our code Linux to save 10% at checkout, or Linux20 to save 20% on your hosting costs.
Do
Not
it.
A bad idea, Do people. It. All right, let's talk about Trapster. Now, this actually isn't an Android exclusive, and that's one of the reasons I really like this app, is it has an iPhone app, it has a BlackBerry app, and it has an Android app.
I'm coughing right in everybody's face. I'm sorry.
It's early. You know how that is. You know, when you...
I'm not going to die. I promise right. myself
if
I'm not going to die.
If you do die, do it on the internet. I have always said that. If you can do it live, you want to do it live.
That's a good point.
So take a look here at Trapster. This app does exactly what the name kind of implies, is it looks for
speeding traps.
Oh. It looks for speeding traps. It overlays the map so you can see what's in your area, and it has...
You big old cheater.
It has different visual codes, and of course it ties in with your GPS, so it knows your GPS location, and it'll give you, like, if they're hidden behind a bush, if they are undercover cop, it'll give you all this kind of stuff. And on the Android, where it has a leg up on the iPhone version, is it can run in the background. Now, this will drain your battery.
But it's like the next generation radar detector.
Right? Exactly. And I used to be a radar detector guy.
Yeah.
I really only just use this to check the traffic before you head out or plug it in. Like on my Droid has like a car mount where it plugs in. Because I tried this. I didn't know it ran in the background because I used to have it on the iPhone. And so on the iPhone, there's no multitasking, so you close it, it'd be closed.
Yeah.
This guy, I was playing it with during a meeting because I was super bored. You know, so I'm sitting here flipping through this application, and I closed it.
You have the most exciting job in the world. Yeah.
And so I closed it, and I set it down on the desk. Well, like an hour later after the meeting, I picked it up, and the phone's hot. It's physically hot, and I'm like, what the heck? I look at it, and like it's been tracking me this whole time. But what it's supposed to do is, you know, you're driving down the street, and this thing's supposed to be able to look at what's coming up and then give you an audible alert with voice packs. I've got freaking Arnold Schwarzenegger. Look out! There's a cop! It's awesome! I wish I could have brought my Android phone out here, but it's actually upstairs charging because... Because
you were using Trapster.
I drained it completely dead. So, great app, and it's
also... It's got its ups and downs.
The other thing they can do, since they have your data connection and they're online already, is it also... overlays live traffic incidents and conditions over the map as well. So it's not just about accidents. So it's not just about where the cops are at, what if they're hiding. This is neat too. When you go by a speed trap, you can tap it because it just overlays on top of a Google map, and you can thumbs up or thumbs down it. So everyone who gets stuck in traffic or pinged by a cop in that area that has this app is voting if that's still a legit hotspot or not.
Oh.
So it's crowdsourced too on its accuracy.
That's
so it's sort of like a Wikipedia of speeding traps that's with you all the time.
That's kind
of
cool.
Yeah. And then to be able to overlay accidents and real-time traffic data is also just – is really actually kind of nice.
So that's what you meant by saving hundreds of dollars. Yeah. You're just not going to get tickets.
You're not going to get a ticket. Or maybe you'll save time in traffic and now you can go do something more productive.
Or you could drive safe, Chris. I'm just saying.
I'm sorry, what? All right, well, I think if you've got an Android app and you want us to feature it on the show, I'd love to hear about it. So hit me up on Twitter. I am twitter.com/ChrisLAS.
All right.
All right, with that said, let's do the news. What's new in the news this week?
Well, Chris, this week we have raised concerns of a Trojan virus Linux being distributed through Unreal.
Yeah.
Online gaming is your nemesis.
So this one I think is particularly interesting mainly because according to the reports, it's been an issue since November.
Yeah.
Anybody that's downloaded.
That's more than 6 months that it's been on their servers.
And it's been Unreal version 3.2.8.1. They found out that somebody replaced the file on their FTP server with a Trojan.
With a backdoor that could potentially... Now, here's the thing. We were talking about this a little before we did the story. Kind of don't think it might have affected anybody because in order for the backdoor to become active, you had to be running it in root.
Yeah, and it was specifically if you're running an Unreal Tournament server on Linux and you're using the IRC chat backend daemon. I don't know if that's actually used for chat or some other inter-server communications protocol, but it's an IRC server.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to run that as root because on Linux, you cannot open a port to the network listening for connections unless you have root privileges.
Okay.
The idea being that way, Joe user can't open up a listening port within a certain range and get infected.
Okay.
You can't open some ports, but just generally speaking, you have to be root. So people would run this Unreal Tournament server as root to be able to do just that, and then that's where the infection would be. And they just didn't notice because really that's a pretty limited use case scenario, especially for a little bit older of a
game. And also want to kind of point out that backdoors generally aren't active. They're basically they just
sitting,
open up your computer to be vulnerable.
They're waiting for the
command. So then, in addition to having this on your system, somebody out there would have to actively be looking for you to have a vulnerability.
Yep. So, or if they're smart, because it is an IRC server communications, it can log into their IRC server and then wait for a command reply back through IRC,
like through a bot.
So it'll be
maybe,
like, "I'm here, I'm waiting." That's really what a bot kind of does.
Yeah.
But they've caught it. There has been no reports of anybody that's actually been bit with this yet, but I'm sure if you've been downloading Unreal Tournament, if you've done any game servers, it might be worth checking out.
Yeah.
Download Clam IV,
they
give
show
it a
you,
scan.
They show you exactly which file was at fault, and they probably tell you how to fix it in this, so you didn't read the entire
We'll have the links over at the show notes.
Yep.
All right, what's next on the news docket for this
VMware
week?
Inks an OEM deal with Novell for SUSE Linux.
Yeah.
You're really excited about this,
I am pretty
you?
Excited about this one. You know, so we've been talking a little bit on and off about the potential that NetWare could be getting bought out or could be selling their assets off.
Mm-hmm.
They are responsible for OpenSUSE, and they make what I think is a really good enterprise distro, SUSE Enterprise Linux. I've used it in production along with Red Hat Enterprise Linux for years, and I think it's a pretty good offering.
Yeah.
Now, they're still the number two enterprise Linux distribution. That's just what it is. But they've just struck this deal with VMware, and this is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like it's going to be a certain version of VMware. They're going to ship NetWare, or they're going to ship SUSE Enterprise Linux with VMware pre-licensed.
Right.
And it looks like you're going to be able to buy it. You're going to buy VMware, and then they're going to provide you the updates for Enterprise Linux.
You know, I'm not too well versed on the whole enterprise thing going on here, but it looks like to kind of draw a correlation. It's kind of like if some big PC manufacturer started shipping a retail box, like eMachine or something, started shipping with an Ubuntu Live CD alongside of it. It's that kind of a deal.
Yeah, for this the enterprise.
Kind of, yeah.
In the enterprise market, because first of all, VMware is a huge virtualization player.
Mm-hmm.
And now to be able to buy VMware and have it come essentially with Linux licenses, you're going to be a lot more inclined, I think, to run that. Even in the very rich enterprise, that incentive of free It's huge.
Yeah.
It is huge. And, and it's a weird head trip in the enterprise, too, because there's a lot of old school management who says, we're not running Linux because we're not paying for it.
Right.
I'm not going to trust anything we don't pay for. But you're paying for VMware. And when you buy VMware, it's coming with this stamp of approval. We approve this Linux here. Run this Linux. Enjoy this Linux. And I think that's awesome. That's really good for
This could
good
be
for
potentially a pretty big step for Linux on the server side
of things. And for Novell. And, you know, Novell still ships their own virtualization platform inside SUSE Enterprise. Red Hat ships one.
Mm-hmm.
But VMware is, they're just doing a lot of really cool things in the space right now. And it's a cool deal.
Yeah.
It's cool. All right. I'm a happy guy about that story. What's next
you
on
are.
Our news story?
Google Chrome OS has confirmed their late fall release. 2010. It's coming.
Really?
Yes, it's coming.
Now, are you excited about Chrome OS? Let me ask you, what are your thoughts on that?
I have good and bad thoughts about this. I am kind of excited because I'll be totally honest, and I know that there will be some backlash over this. I'm a bit of a Google fanboy.
Yeah,
it's kind of made my life really simple.
I know. That's how I feel, too.
I don't like that they have everything and know everything about me, and they're a little bit evil.
Right.
But that being said,
it's such a convenient evil.
It is convenient evil.
I know.
So I'm
it's like fast food. They're like fast food.
Yes. And I hate fast food.
Yeah,
can't you
me
tell?
Me too. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like the delicious new bacon at Wendy's. I hate that. It's such an improvement.
I hate that so hard.
I know.
I'm really intrigued by the idea of cloud computing, which is kind of what Google Chrome is built around.
Yeah, for sure.
Chrome OS. I think it's kind of weird though, because I think if you're gonna go with cloud computing, you kind of got to go all the way.
You got to go all in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to go all in. You got to get rid of local storage, except when it's absolutely necessary.
Offline editing and stuff like that.
Like backup copies and stuff like that. But those should be wiped when you have network access.
Wow.
You know?
See, I'm a kind of fan of Ubuntu One Dropbox combo where I've got a local cache. And it's always mine still. But, you know.
Well, there's a speed thing.
We use the heck out of, for Jupyter Broadcasting, we use the heck out of Google Docs.
Yeah.
I mean, we really,
and Dropbox.
And Dropbox, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, they both kind of serve a different purpose. We use Dropbox to distribute large video files,
art,
and artwork and
show
things like
themes.
That. And we use Google Docs for more like show preparation, mm-hmm. and
We've
whatnot.
Got our Google Docs up right now for show notes.
So now Chrome OS, one of the things that they are thinking about including, or at least has been rumored, is the ability, they're going to call it Desktop Portal or something like this. Now, this is totally rumor at this stage, but what folks are saying is that you're going to have essentially an instant-on remote desktop connection back to your machine. I'm assuming a Windows box at this
point. One of the things I like about cloud computing is that idea that your machine is not in your hand.
Right.
It's not the thing that you're interacting
with.
Have you seen
LogMeIn 123 and stuff like that? They use this little agent and it proxies the connection.
Well, I've seen you use them.
You don't have to use any file. You don't have to configure your firewall or anything like that. You just have to have a username and a password, and it has to be authenticated. So it's something you know, something you have. So it's like an ATM type of authentication, and then it bridges these connections and brings you right to your desktop.
Yep.
That's what they're saying. They're going to do that kind of thing in Chrome OS. That could be really cool.
As long as they design it well. I mean, having an OS with that really makes me concerned about security on the OS in general.
Totally agree.
But, you know, maybe they've got all that figured out. Google should be pretty good at security at this point.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, are you awesome with security?
Am I?
Yeah, are you awesome with your security setup at home?
I like to think I'm above average, but I don't think I'm awesome. I don't have ports locked down on my firewall.
But theoretically,
or anything like that.
Now I am playing devil's advocate here in a major way, but theoretically, right, Google loses everything the minute they lose our trust. So they have teams and teams of guys and gals and the most brilliant PhDs in the world focused on security.
Yeah, that's
kind
of what I'm saying. They've got to be good at it.
So they're going to be better at it than you and I, in theory.
Yeah. Well, God, I hope so.
but the difference is, our interest in is number one is us. Their interest is going to be Google, followed by as much as possible us.
Right.
So there's always that. But I think Chrome OS is interesting. I still am not clear on where it fits in with Android.
Right.
Because it's another device platform. And then we should jump. I know you've got the next story is it's a canonical one, right? We might be going out of order a little bit, but
I've got an HP story if you're up for it.
They all kind of tie together. Let's do that. So let's talk about this HP story you've got here.
Yeah, HP has acquired the Linux Fastboot technology.
Yeah, and this is a company that has been building this specifically for they've got their name on there if you can find it. I don't remember if it was something that Zandros used to create their Presto boot environment.
Yep.
And a couple other I think it's like Hyperspace like
Linux Fastboot technology from Phoenix Technologies.
That's what it is. And this is, I think it accomplishes like nearly instant on Linux booting via a process of a virtualization. So it's more of resuming a suspended virtual machine than it is actually booting and executing all of the init scripts and stuff.
Wow, $12 million for that. I got to make something like that.
You know, I don't know where HP's going with this. I don't know if their plan is...
This story on its own struck me as pretty bland. But you said the whole reason that you've included this is because they've made some other recent acquisitions that you find interesting.
Well, you know, HP made the WebOS acquisition, which is from Palm, and they've come out and said, you know, we're looking at it for tablets. We're looking at it for devices everywhere from a 10-inch tablet down to the little printer screen that people have now on your printer. And I'm... Okay. I have mixed feelings about that. It could be really awesome, but all of these things do need some sort of instant-on access.
Yeah.
And additionally, if you can't compete with the iPad on 10 hours, 13 hours of battery life, so you're going to need to do a deeper power sleep mode because the iPad isn't on because it's sleeping. But perhaps they can't accomplish that with some sort of always-on power, so maybe they need
to
do...
We do know that they've had troubles with sleep and... Several different,
and they do, and the and the rumor is the HP Slate, which was going to feature Windows 7, was scrapped because at best in real life it was going to be able to accomplish around 3 to 4 hours of battery.
Wow!
And then when the iPad dropped with a 10-hour battery life, people say, okay, we can't ship that. But perhaps your way around that is to do a different type of power management where you're doing more of an off,
a fast boot.
Yeah, and of course, and you mentioned on a printer, if you're going to have an OS, you don't want to wait a minute for it.
You know, I have a really powerful printer at my house, and it takes sometimes up to 2 minutes to turn on.
Yeah,
That's a pain in the butt.
And these printers, like the one you're talking about and the one these corporations have, these displays on them that are fully interactive. You can send email to them.
It's a little computer. I mean, that's more powerful than some of the computers I played with growing up.
And they're talking about putting WebOS on it, which would be so those little printers will be running Linux. And then you combine that with this fast boot technology. Now I think we're starting to see something that makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
And then that's something, too, that I'm sure HP has bought up these technologies in the past and then licensed them out.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual for them to still continue to offer something like this in the marketplace. Should we talk a little bit, too, about this all sort of ties in here.
Mm-hmm.
What's our next story?
Canonical is developing Ubuntu OS for tablets.
Yeah.
Now, before we get into the actual news, didn't they already have something like this? It was a
netbook remix. Right? And I don't know where this differs. And if people in the chat room know, I'd love to hear if you know how this differs from the netbook edition. I was kind, because it's all early details right now, so you kind of read it right, and you look at it, and you and I were both going over this, and we're trying to glean the details out of it.
Two things came to my mind right away. One was the netbook remix, and is this going to replace it, or what? And the second is, what tablet are they making this for?
Actually, doesn't it say in the article that they're making it for theoretical hardware that doesn't even exist yet?
Yeah, they don't even estimate a release date on a tablet that would run this until late in the winter of 2011. That's 18 months away.
Okay. Now, here's my first reaction when this stuff comes up. I had the same reaction with the Ubuntu Music Store, although less to an extent, but more so to this is I really feel like sometimes, and I just don't, and I know I just don't understand the business model, and maybe we should have somebody over from Canonical on the show to talk about this. I don't follow the logic here. It seems to me like the focus is not on building the most amazing desktop Linux experience. If you watch and follow Mark Shuttleworth as he blogs and as he talks in interviews and stuff like that, it's obvious he does take some inspiration from Steve Jobs and Apple. He tries to take some of the positive inspirations,
mm-hmm.
their attention to aesthetics and things like that,
and some of the showmanship,
right?
The presenting and
making a nice presentation,
yeah. Which is, I mean, that's a good thing.
It's a really good thing.
The good thing about having a company like this
Linux
involved
in
Linux, right, exactly, is maybe it'll spread to more better aesthetics throughout the entire.
I think maybe that has started to happen.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I would say, another Apple has like 100,000 bad things about them.
Yeah.
And they have like two or three things that I can get behind. And one of them is they have a laser focus. They just did the Worldwide Developers Conference, a massive conference, sold out. People came from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And they talked about one thing, iOS and apps. They have a huge...
Well, and the iPhone 4 announcement.
Well, that's what I mean. iOS and the apps and things around the mobile platform.
Okay.
They didn't even really talk about the Mac because they're focused on winning the mobile war. Apple has all resources pointed in that direction, good or bad, whatever. Mm-hmm. Imagine if Canonical, even with their more limited resources, were able to just singularly focus on building the most amazing Linux experience possible. I think we could be doing some really amazing things.
In a single market, either desktop or handhelds, or tablets.
Or do desktop and server, so yeah. Now, so that seems pretty obvious to me.
Mm-hmm.
So then I start to think, maybe they know that, and perhaps the reason that they are doing this kind of stuff is that they are hoping that by throwing this kind of stuff out there, that maybe the future of Linux is more mobile-based.
It's kind of a gamble, you know?
Yeah.
There are no devices.
I mean, you look at
mobile. They've made a few agreements that are mentioned in the article with big companies like Intel that might be helping them to create devices that would use this. But
right. And, you know, honestly, 2.5 years ago or so, I was at Ubuntu One, and there was a Intel-powered...
But now Intel's on board with Maemo and doing the Mego thing. So.
I know. I don't get it. Now, all of this stuff with Chrome OS, with Maemo, with Mego, with Ubuntu, in a way, I kind of look at it almost like evolution. Put it all out there and see what survives. The strong, you know, survival of the fittest will eventually make its way out.
But if you're spreading yourself too thin, nothing is going to be the fittest.
That's the issue. Is right now there is a... There is a couple of ravenous predators out there in the wild,
mm-hmm.
that are eating up our babies like crazy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of focusing on keeping a couple of babies safe and making them awesome
children,
we just
keep making more babies.
We're just making a ton of babies.
Yeah.
and Apple comes along and rolls over a million of them in 2 months, and Android comes along and rolls over 100,000 of them every single month.
Yeah.
And while Android is Linux, where do you fit in this spot, Canonical, and why?
I almost get the
why
feeling,
do this now and not focus on your core product?
I almost get the feeling that at this point, and maybe it's too early to make this determination, I feel like Android has already won the handheld device Linux world.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people don't like that, but
people would argue that if you draw the comparison of the very early PC market, there was a lot of PC manufacturers, even some very big mm-hmm. ones of their day, that just aren't around anymore.
Well, even some of the big ones like Gateway was bought out by
Dell. So that could happen.
Alienware was bought out by Dell.
That could still happen to Apple. That could still happen to Android. There's still a chance.
Nobody's going to buy Apple.
But they could fade away because of their closed market practices and things like
that. Yeah, it's possible.
And not likely. But
Well, what I was getting at, though, is wouldn't it make more sense? Like, Ubuntu originally came out as an adaptation of something else.
Of Debian.
Yeah. Yep. And it just basically took the best of Debian and turned it into a new package. What if Ubuntu or some other major player out there took a similar stance with Android?
So they Ubuntunized Android like they've done with Debian.
Right.
That could be sweet.
Then you could play off the base that's already there, the strong Android base.
That could be really sweet.
And then also still be your own thing.
So you get the best of both. You take the Ubuntu experience. You make these nice, slick interface, these apps, these things that they've done to sort of integrate the experience.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's the direction I think they should go. Instead of reinventing the wheel, take what's out there and just make it awesome.
Stand on the shoulder of giants.
Yeah. Take something that's got a ton of momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And when Canonical does it right, Ubuntu can just dominate the headlines a lot more than you'd expect.
Yeah.
Way more so than any other Linux distro out there. I mean, just go to Dig, go to Linux Today, go to all the Linux news sites.
Yeah.
Ubuntu will make it to Engadget. No other distribution will make it. And if they came out and it was Ubuntu plus Android equal awesome.
Like U Android or something like that.
Oh, U Android. Yeah. I'm telling you guys, that would... Oh, man. I would totally put a ROM of that on my Droid. Mm-hmm. And these Android devices are just like... You know, okay. Wow, this comparison works so well because it used to be really freaking hard to install Linux on a PC.
Yeah, yep, yep.
And just like right now, it's not really freaking hard, but you have to kind of know how to enable root mode on your Android device and then flash it with a ROM. Mm-hmm. That sounds hard, but they've actually got some really nice software to do it. But there's comparisons there to how it was to installing Linux on a PC
hardware. And Ubuntu made it easier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that would be cool. We've got a bunch of comments here in the live chat room. One guy says Ubuntu droid.
Ubuntu droid, yeah.
Yeah. And a droid. I like Android and Ubuntu.
And Ubuntu.
Nice, guys. Anything else in the news document?
Yeah, yeah. What do we got? How could you forget about this? The Boxy Box has a release date.
Saddens me. That's how I
know.
About
so
it.
How could you forget about it? Just
I guess if you put it like the way you put it, they have a release date. That's good. That makes me like a light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, you know, I'm a gamer. Whenever we finally find out that there's
you
a release
date, you
at least
know what to look for.
Right.
Yeah.
And we know when to put it on our Christmas list and things like that.
We've covered the Boxy Box once or twice on the show before, and I did a
pretty in-depth review of it.
In-depth review, and so later on in this episode, we're going to be doing a review of Xbox XBMC, which is what Boxy is based off of.
Mm-hmm.
Both of
but
which
at the same time,
Linux.
Kind of still a competitor
to
Boxy Box.
Yeah, sure. So Boxy Box was developing their own hardware. It was going to be something you could set up in your home entertainment system. And it was a little funky box. It's still going to be a little funky box.
It looks like a cube that's sinking into the ground.
That's exactly what they were going for. They are going to be featuring all of the HD formats you might come to know and love. It's going to be running Linux with a Boxy UI on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly HD video playback, Flash playback, all that stuff.
Yeah, all the good stuff.
Very it's got this keyboard that you flip over, and it's got a full QWERTY keyboard on the backside of it. That's genius, you guys.
Right.
I mean, that's just smart. Anyways, so they have had a delay until November for the Boxy Box. So if you've been looking to get yourself a prepackaged, awesome Linux-running multimedia server that I freaking love.
The social side of it is, I think, one of the coolest things.
The integration is
about
actually
it.
Pretty cool. So,
but I got to say, the shape of the box is still a complete turnoff because it can't be an integrated part of your entertainment center. You can't slide it in there between your DVD player.
I know. You know, I have the same complaint.
It's got to sit out on top.
I have the same complaint with the PlayStation 3, though, because the PlayStation 3 kind of has
that curved top.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got to be on top. But then if you have this and a PS3.
Which I do.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that at
both
all.
Both of them have to be on top.
I think that sucks.
Yeah.
But I know that the thing is, I have right now, I have a PC hooked up to my TV that I have XBMC and Boxy on.
Yeah. Both of them.
Yeah. But it's loud, it's clunky, it needs to be rebooted. This is going to be a silent little box that just runs 24/7, very low power, doing Boxy. Running Linux. And that's just going to be really cool.
Now, you've been basically waiting for this since you guys did your big review.
Months.
6 months ago, maybe.
Yep.
The fact that this is not going to be coming out for another 6 months, it makes me nervous that things like Google TV and Apple TV might completely blow it out of the water before it even lands.
Especially Google TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Logitech's supposed to be shipping something late summer. Boy, I know. I bet the guys at Boxy.
You would think that the recent announcement and unveil of Google TV would actually kick these guys into gear and make them really punch
you know
it up
their
a
response
notch and get
was?
Ready.
Which I extremely, extremely respect. You know what their response was to Google
Pull it
TV?
Back.
No, they're apparently they want to do some refining. No, they said, you know what? Oh, hey, check out Google TV. Maybe we'll make an app for that. We'll just make a Boxy app.
So you can just run it on your Boxy
box. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why not? Let them. This is what I love about Boxy. Boxy lets you run it on your own hardware. Boxy lets you run it on the Apple TV if you want to hack it. And they actively have to make a version to run on that.
Yeah.
So they are totally – they know what you're doing, and they encourage it. And there's like, oh, yeah, this awesome competitor. Well, you know what? They can run third-party apps, so let's do it. And because unlike the Apple TV, the Google TV is an open platform, so it's literally just going to be an app you install.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty respectable. And I think it also says something further about them, that they didn't use the hype of Google TV in that manner in their announcement. They didn't say, and we're also going to be able to run Google.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
They're them.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed with these guys. I'm impressed with the product.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
It's a long ways away. A lot can change in the next 6 months.
A couple of major shaky tactical errors. The shape of the box is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Not being able to stack it is a big problem.
But it is really cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll give them that.
Yeah, and it's
got a neat aesthetic to it.
It's supposed to be a lot better in person. People at CES said that it has a shiny aspect to it. The Boxy logo glows, but it's not this overly bright glow that would bother you in the dark. It's a very nice, pleasant, like, I'm intelligent thinking kind of glow. So it sounds aesthetically pleasing, but you're right.
Yeah, somebody asked in the chat room just now who makes the Boxy box, and it's by D-Link.
Yep.
They primarily make networking peripherals, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Things like routers.
Yeah, D-Link has played with the set-top boxes that you can hook up to your TV and stream, and most of them have been Linux-based. They've just sucked. It's always been underpowered. And see, this one looks like they're really trying to throw in some CPU to get some good flash playback.
And they're trying to make it very affordable and very quiet, which are two things that you just said are real big.
That's why
you don't want to put it on a PC every time.
That's why I don't like having it on the PC, and that's why I don't have an Xbox 360 in my main living room, because it's just too freaking loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good story. I like that.
And Chris, that's all the news for this week. So we just got done talking about the Boxy Box a little bit. Now, Boxy is based on the Xbox Media Center software that's been around for quite a while.
Which has been officially shortened to drop the
XBMC.
Xbox. Yeah, to XBMC.
Yeah. So we've been getting a lot of requests for... Chris did a review of this back in 2008.
Yeah. A long time ago, I talked about XBMC, and it was a pretty popular video on YouTube, but that video honestly did kind of skew more towards Boxy.
It did.
And
you've been a fanboy of Boxy for a long time.
And then Boxy released an update, and we covered Linux Action Show, and I thought, you know what? We deserve XBMC deserves its own specific mention in the Linux Action Show, because it has got to be one of the absolute best media center software packages out there.
Well, and just the facts that Boxy, that you're a fan of, is based on XBMC kind of lends itself to the fact. Yeah.
Now, XBMC is, despite the name, not for the Xbox. In fact, they've completely dropped all support for the original Xbox.
Give me a little history of that, because
so
I find
Genesis.
This interesting.
Yeah, the genesis is that they came out with a release for the hacked Xbox. They wanted to produce a really good media center.
Not the 360.
No, the original Xbox that you could hack really easily. They wanted a great media center for it, and they created one. It was so popular that as the original Xbox began to sort of, age, get old, slow, replaced...
Yep.
They came out with a version for Linux of XBMC, and they produced it under Linux, and it started to get more and more popular, and as it sort of reached the beta stage, they came out with Mac and Windows versions.
Cool.
And now it continues to have...
I'm a big fan of software that crosses the platform
lines. Totally agree.
That's great stuff.
And really, in XBMC's case, there's advantages to each platform.
Yeah.
Each platform, you just kind of have to look at, and that's what I'm going to cover.
Okay.
You kind of have to look at your pros and cons and figure out how you want to run it and what you're going to be doing.
Now, you've got it running.
I've got it on an Ubuntu box in my living room, which is pretty great. And I have a particular use scenario where I don't need live TV.
Okay.
So I'm going to put that out there right now. There are people working on ways to have live TV into XBMC. At the moment, the default install does not support live streaming TV. So we're
something
like
MIT TV. But
because
it's open source, can you get a plug-in?
They're already working. Yeah,
oh, okay.
People are already working on that.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's something that I know. I just happen to be one of the few people that don't need live TV. I only need to play stored content on my network.
Right.
Or off YouTube and things like that.
You know, I think that's the way of the future, to be honest. It's full media on demand.
Yeah.
Because if you know there's something out there you want, you just go get it, and then you've got it.
Secondarily, it needs to have high spousal approval.
Yes.
Because if she can't sit down and operate the media center and the TV...
So it's got to have like a low headroom for entry. Yeah. You got to be able to sit down and use it.
We've got some clips here of the interface, which is fully themable. So, mm-hmm. you know, what we're showing you here isn't necessarily the only interface. That's, of course, just like Linux desktop, there are lots of really, really great themes. You can do a cover flow as
I like that opening menu.
What we're showing you right now is XBMC running on Linux Mint, and which is honestly the best way you should go, because one of the nice, if you get the right version of Linux Mint, it comes with a lot of the video codecs that I had to install mm-hmm. to get XBMC to play everything I had. I probably should have just gone Mint.
This looks really slick, I gotta say.
It just like Boxy, it has the ability to go out and scrape based on file name and things like that, all of the individual episode names, get all of the artwork, get awesome backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it really turns a widescreen, high-definition TV into a presentation of your media collection.
One might even say a media center.
One very well might say that. It also keeps track of what you've already seen. It gives you plot summaries mm-hmm. on an individual episode level. It gives you the artworks of each individual episode. Really just fantastic work there. If you've got a lot of media content in that way, you're never going to go wrong with XBMC or Box.
I also just really – I like these little widgets in the corners, the little overlays. They're just always there.
Yep.
But they're not
intrusive. The
thing is,
what we're looking at right now is we're looking at a version that's a CoverFlow interface to XBMC.
So now this person has started a movie, and this is kind of a –
Yep.
That's cool.
And it gives you all of you can have it completely just nice and easy, friendly, or you can pull out all of the nitty gritty geeky information like your frame rate, your bit rate, your
exact resolution. I just want to say real quick that movie was a gigantic disappointment as a Beatles fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the
The musical thing?
Yeah.
Terrible.
This cover flow that they're showing, and you notice also why you continue to browse, the movie keeps playing.
Mm-hmm.
The cover flow scenario that they're showing there is not very good for large collections. But again, just a different theme. Mm-hmm. Where XBMC, I think, has a big strength over Boxy, though Boxy is trying to counter this with a Boxy app marketplace, is they allow for plugins to be installed, and you just check into their plugin repo through the XBMC interface.
Here, load this up. It's another different
user. It does it through SVN in the back end. So it's a really kind of cool way to stay totally up to date with what people are working on.
Mm-hmm.
You can work this in too with an Android application or an iPhone application that is an amazing remote control. It connects over Wi-Fi, and the XBMC software allows you to connect. You can turn it on, and then it accepts connections over an HTTP Apache web server.
Mm-hmm.
And on your Android phone or your iPhone, you get the most amazing freaking remote control. Why? Because it's all IP-based, so on your mother effing remote control, you have your entire movie collection or your entire TV collection on your phone, and you can sit here and scroll it on your mother effing Android, and you can choose what video you want to watch, and then all of a sudden it'll start playing on your TV. It is the freaking future in your living room.
And in your hand.
And if you have an iPad, they have iPad apps, mm-hmm. which are just these gigantic interface window into your media library, and the spousal approval at that point, when you can hand them your Android droid and they can browse the media collection on their droid, like while mm-hmm. she's walking around, maybe she's getting ready to watch dinner, she can just sit here and thumb through it. Amazing.
Yeah,
and
so you don't have to be sitting in front of your television.
She was actually upstairs getting Dylan ready to come downstairs and was reviewing the Android phone. And she's like, oh, yeah, you know what? I'd like to watch that one. Hits the button. It starts queued up downstairs. She hits pause. It's all ready to go. She walks down. As she's coming around the corner, she hits play on the Android device and it starts playing as she walks into the kitchen. I mean, just so freaking high tech, right?
We live in the future.
I know, dude. it's fantastic HD playback. That's going to more depend on your codecs. So go with the Linux distro that's got good codecs, or mm-hmm. go out and get the Fluendo pack. If you run it on Windows, one of the advantages that you will have is the ability to stream Netflix movies.
And that's not available.
Via a plugin, and that's not available yet under Linux due to it being wrapped in Silverlight and DRM.
Oh, right. Okay.
Many, many different themes out there for XBMC, some of which I don't like, but they all support this extended functionality with the remote devices.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have like messaging pop-ups. So if I get a phone call and I have my droid connected running as a remote, the caller ID shows up on the TV.
Well, remember, that could be annoying, but I can see how it would also be cool.
Remember like in Back to the Future when they're watching the TV and he gets a call from Needles and got the caller ID up on the
TV? We live in the future!
We're living Back to the Future, buddy! It's powered by Linux!
Now, if they could only get us some dehydrated pizzas.
I know, right?
Hydrate level 4, please.
Yeah.
Hydrate level 4.
Yeah. So they have this totally plug-in architecture. So all this different stuff comes in, all these different media scrapers, library management tools, Twitter apps, all this different stuff that geeks would want.
Okay, so tell me, is it really easy to use? Is it really easy to plug in? Like, you say that it's got spouse approval, but you've already done all the
setup. A lot
of
it depends on your comfort level with Linux, if you're going to do a Linux machine. It's okay. Not hard. It's in the repo. Or you can download the most latest version. And then it's a matter of pointing at your media library, which honestly, depending on your theme, can be really hard. Mm-hmm. I tried a theme where I could not find the buttons to scan a new media library folder.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That theme gets a thumbs down.
That theme got a thumbs down. But
ka-dunk.
I added... I got some Chuck DVDs, and yeah. I cataloged them, and it went out automatically and downloaded all of... Remember Chuck Season 1?
Yeah.
Well, I put that on the server.
I'm working my way through it right now.
And I turned on XBMC after having put Season 1 on the server, uh-huh. and I just saw a little nice notification thing pop up saying, going out and fetching all the information. I just watched it go, beep, 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 like through all the episodes of Season 1, bop, 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 bop,
bop. Got all the box art and everything in the background.
Got all the box art, all the episode descriptions, before I was even able to get to that section in the TV. And let me tell you, it's not a small library, okay? It's scanning that library extremely efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps not quite as fast as Boxy does, but very fast. Very, very cool stuff.
All right.
I'm so happy with XBMC. I'm probably going to wipe and go to Mint to do a couple other things because I want to change the hardware a little bit too. But I have to give Ubuntu mad props. I had some trouble with another machine doing HDMI out, and mm-hmm. on this machine, I forget what it's a little bit older of an ATI card. I think it's a 4000 series.
Okay.
Seems to be working like a champ. Just audio out, video out, everything out of this HDMI
So in
port.
Your original review back in 08,
mm-hmm.
you were very heavily into Boxy.
Mm-hmm.
It was clearly the winner. It had Advantage Boxy written all over that review. Just far and away.
Oh, another
by
thing,
leaps and bounds. But how
I know where you're going. Let me just say one thing in the chat room real quick. I also want to mention that XBMC also acts as a UNP client and server, and what that means...
UPnP.
UPnP. Yeah. So there's devices on the network that support UNP. Like, UPnP is supported by a few Linux media players, by the Xbox 360, by the PlayStation 3, by the Wii, and by a lot of Android apps, where they'll automatically discover media servers and be able to stream media to and from them.
Mm-hmm.
So now these devices are communicating. So the XBMC server is acting like a gateway to my media library for all my other devices on my network.
Oh, neat.
So what you're
like
asking,
an intermediary.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was going to ask which one you would still recommend.
Boxy.
If somebody was in the market.
I would do Boxy because Boxy also has this plugins and abilities to do apps, only it's more of a curated environment. It's almost more like Android Marketplace versus Apple App Store, whereas the Apple App Store, it's not locked down like the App Store, but it's mm-hmm. a little more hand-picked. And so the quality level is a little higher, whereas on XBMC, I was literally checking plugins out. Now, it's all automated. I just select an option, and it does it. But it's checking plugins out through mm-hmm. SVN, and in some cases, actually building them.
Okay.
And that is as
so
fresh code as it gets.
More of a tinkerer's toy.
Yes, yes,
so if you're more
yeah.
comfortable with that kind of stuff, you might want to go with XBMC.
A TV in my office,
yeah.
I'm doing XBMC, no question.
All right.
A TV in the living room where my wife and her family has to come over and operate it, and she also really digs the social integration with her family. Hey,
yeah.
I just watched this episode of Glee.
And I liked it. So
yeah. She digs that, so I can't really take that back. Plus, you combine that Boxy is going to be offering very soon a complete plug-in solution at hopefully a reasonable price with the mm-hmm. Boxy box. To me, in my opinion, that just feels like a more complete solution. I'm going to be able to plug in and walk away.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, while XBMC looks awesome and has awesome functionality, I want my TV to be as low-key and as relaxing as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to geek out with XBMC in my office, in my main room. I think I'm going to stick with Boxy. So while my review now skews much more favorably XBMC, they've done a great amount of work. It's still
a tinkerer's niche.
I think so. Now, or I set it up once and forget it. Which is what my approach is right now in the living room. That's why I'm going to redo it to Mint. So that way I just want it done once.
Okay.
And I'm going to I'm going to try working with the wife because she does like her comment was something to the effect of she feels like she can see more of the media. Like XBMC does a better job of showcasing the media with the dynamic entire backgrounds that change and all that stuff. It just felt so much more integrated as a showcase for the media, whereas Boxy just had an awesome list of your media. It wasn't like this whole dynamic experience.
Okay.
XBMC is more of a media experience, I think, in a lot of ways.
That's a good review.
Well, there you have
I like
it.
That okay. summary.
All right, everyone. I'd love to hear what you have to mm-hmm. Say about XBMC and Boxy. And we're always following this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we do that. Tell people where they can leave us a little feedback.
Well, you can go over to jupitercolony.com. That's a forum on the internet where you can not only give us feedback, but you can also interact with the rest of your Jupiter Broadcasting fan peers.
There you have it. Mm-hmm. And if you're using XBMC, Boxy, maybe you're using something else, let us know. Mm-hmm. I know John739 in the chat room said something about CMBC. Now, perhaps that was just one letter off from XBMC, or perhaps that is an entire media server that I don't know anything about.
We don't know.
But you can go and yell at me at JupiterColony.com.
Yeah.
All right. That's our look at XBMC. And that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast. And I wanted to say we've got a couple of things in the works over at JupiterBroadcasting.com. If you haven't checked there in a while, it is time to go back. First of all, if you're into video games, you've got to check out Legend of the Stoned Owl, Lotso. That's our new show, and it just came out last week, and we did our top three co-op games.
Mm-hmm.
We did our top three, so if you like those kinds of things, we've done a few.
So what you guys usually do is like big video game news, mm-hmm. reviews, and like an editorial section.
Yeah. We lean heavily on the editorial. We figure, you know, you're not going to have the late-breaking gaming news every 2 weeks on Lotso.
Right.
That's just not going to happen.
Right.
So you could have gotten that anywhere, so now it's really more about let's talk about games,
mm-hmm.
let's discuss the issues around them, discuss what new games are introducing to the gaming, you know, experience. What has the bar just been raised? Did they lower? Did they do what they said they were going to do?
Right.
Those kinds of things are all over on Lotso.
Yep.
Now, we're really excited, too, because we're in the process of beta testing a whole new show called Jupiter at Night. And Jupiter at Night is going to be a nightly broadcast.
A live nightly broadcast.
Live, nightly, Monday through Thursday mm-hmm. broadcast. And it's going to be late at night, as the name would imply. We're thinking
somewhere between a 10 o'clock to midnight Pacific window. We haven't nailed that just yet.
The show format is still in early stages of development. If you'd like to watch a couple episodes, we've only put a couple out,
mm-hmm.
and give us some feedback because we're trying to really develop a really tight show here for mm-hmm. everyone. YouTube.com/JupiterBroadcasting. In there, there's going to be a couple of the episodes.
Yeah.
You'll see one with Jeremy and I, one with Alan and I. We're probably going to have a little bit of somewhat of a rotating cast, or like we were talking about maybe a few ideas where it'll be guest hosts come in and talk about like a movie review or mm-hmm. a game, like in the show itself.
Right.
And we're going to feature a lot of your community feedback. That's going to be a huge thing. Mm-hmm. Errata. So if we say something really dumb on Linux Action Show, we're going to make a correction in that show because part of the problem with Linux Action Show is by the time the next week comes around, it's been too long to talk about that.
And there's so much new news to talk about, new things to talk about, that you don't want to go back to the week before.
Exactly.
Usually. Yeah.
So we'll feature the errata in the Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to throw in some interesting news stories from the day to sort of cap off your day. We're going to have some interesting science. We're going to take a geek science slant.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea will be you can watch it live, interact with us, cap off your night, or if you want something to watch in the morning to get sort of a jumpstart from what happened yesterday and get all caught up.
Mm-hmm.
You can download the show and listen or watch it on your way to work, whatever you want to do.
But like Chris said earlier, a big part of that show is going to be what do you find interesting?
Yeah, so we're definitely seeking feedback. So the shows, the pilot and the beta,
mm-hmm.
and there'll probably be future betas, are over at youtube.com/JupiterBroadcast.
And we're probably going to launch that in about a week, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Officially.
Yeah. We're not quite sure.
So you've got time to give us your ideas
yep.
and some topics that you might want to cover.
Yep. We just, you know, we want to do this one right. And so mm-hmm. Please do help us out with that.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I think that just about wraps up this episode of the Linux Action Show.
That was a great episode.
Thank you, sir.
If I do say so myself.
Thank you for filling in for Brian. That was kind of a last minute thing. His wife went back to school. She graduated.
Yep.
And they're having
celebration.
So not only
is she smart, but she's got a piece of paper to prove it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he's out celebrating with her, and they're doing family stuff today. So Jeremy, mm-hmm. At the last minute, sat in for him. And you did an excellent job, sir.
Well, thank you.
All right, everyone. Well, we come out every Sunday at JupiterBroadcasting.com, and we hope to see you there next week.